Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Darren Moser, down here at Holodeck 2. I'm joined in the newly installed foyer by my co-hosts Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue. Gentlemen, what program should we use today?
I'm still updating the Bridgemates program, guys. You know how Kirk kind of cheated the system to make sure you won? I tried, guys, and it was still a tie. So I've still got some reprogramming to do before we do this program again.
Fix it, Philip. Fix it. I mean, gosh, we paid you in credits for a win, and the best we could do is a tie. No, I'm just kidding. We did. But, well, what's maybe Daniel's choice is better. What do you think we should activate?
Oh, Skeletor, obviously. We want to fight Skeletor. I mean.
If you remember, Skeletor was not one of my favorite choices in our last Bridgemates, but...
This is why. This is why, guys.
you're not helping the situation, Philip. Well, today I wanted to talk about the holodeck, and I know, I'm sure some of our dedicated listeners, or listeners who have started a listen-through of Earl Grey would be like, wait, Darren, you already talked about holodecks in episode 4. Now, guys, that's like 100-something plus episodes back.
So I'm getting a tweet right now from first-time Earl Grey.
So I think it's okay to broach again. And actually, I re-listened to that episode in prep, and we were more talking about the technology than its use in the show.
Darren, also, I feel like you shouldn't feel the need to defend yourself, because much like TNG, I think we can keep coming back to this well for a few more times, and we'll be okay.
Okay, maybe 3 episodes total about the holodeck. I mean,
if it's not broke, don't... Well, actually, it always breaks.
If it's not broken this week. Well, so today I wanted to focus on an aspect of the holodeck of using it as a tool in a function that... I mean, we see it used for recreation. We see it used, you know, for training. Well, it's kind of a tool. But I'm trying to move away from the episodes like Fistful of Data's, where they're just, it's a holodeck fantasy, and focus more on when our main characters are utilizing this incredible... I mean, the holodeck is an incredible tool. Like, just the fact that you can bend it to your will and create interfaces, you can create, you know, situations and locations. So I felt there was enough there for at least a 10-minute episode, but I think we can probably get an hour out of it. So first off, in no particular order, I wanted to talk about Troy's officer exam that she had in the main engineering hologram in Thine Own Self, which is season 7, episode 16. This is the famous sending Geordi to his death scene. Now, again, it's not a very, you know, intensive recreation in the fact that, you know, he just reappears when she reactivates it. It's not very holography, but it is on the holodeck, and it is showing that they use the holodeck for conducting, you know, evaluations and exams and very kind of Starfleet, you know, it's like school. If I could have a school in a holodeck, I think that would be great. So, and you know, it is the, I think it's like the B or C plot of that episode, but it is, I think, the great way to start talking about this use of holodeck technology.
You know, it makes me wonder, we sort of see the evolution of training, like in Star Trek II, they have the danger room that they use, the danger bridge room, and which they have to repair like every week with those cadets. Oh, lousy Kobayashi Maru. But then even in coming of age on the Next Generation, we have, you know, what is it called? The character test, or what is it?
The psych, you know, test.
The psych test, excuse me, which is not actually what it's supposed to be called, apparently. But anyway, but yeah, and so you have like, oh no, I'm going to die. And then it's like, turn it off. Shh. All right, clean it out. Clean it. This is just a cargo bay.
There's a bell ringing and the red light turns off and they can open the door. And
that's right. And then Admiral Kirk comes out. And, no, wait, wrong one.
He's clapping the slow clap. Well done, Wesley.
There, Philip, you hit it right on the head. Like, I literally had the same two thoughts. First, my head went to the Kobayashi Maru. And then I started like you did in Star Trek 2 and then went to 09. And I'm thinking Star Trek 2 actually has more convincing simulation in that aspect. And I think that was also part of the joke in 09 where he wasn't taking it seriously. Is he not taking this seriously?
Right. Yeah, he's eating an apple.
But it's not as intense, obviously. But then Coming of Age came to my mind and I'm like, why did that must be the most elaborate setup for something they can do with holodeck technology ever. Like, why did they hire actors? They have like,
it could have been a holodeck. We just wouldn't know it.
No, because I think everything ends and like the person that's under the thing, like gets up and, oh, I'm just fine, Wesley. Don't worry. Like,
would you like my card? I'm part of an acting troupe. We have improvs at Ha Ha's on Friday.
I'm
going to
get
nights.
My SAG credit after this. This is great.
And that stands for Space Actors Guild, I believe.
Starfleet Actors Guild.
So it's like...
Starfleet Academy
it's
Guild.
So funny that you started here because that's exactly where my head went. Was like, why the heck didn't they use this in Coming of Age? Like, this should be the ultimate training tool. There's no reason you would ever...
Just build a massive building that's a massive holodeck and just, you know, use that. And again, there are other shows like Voyager and I feel like this type, but we're going to focus on TNG.
Well, this is the arguments I think about, you know, it's kind of like I think, Dan, you've done this replicator argument. But this is sort of the holodeck argument. Like, shouldn't every building be a holodeck?
Yeah, right.
Like you would never need to like, man, I would really like to redesign this room, not knock down the, a computer, adjust, you know, like.
Right. It's actually a cube that's 10 feet square, but from the holodeck's perspective, it's like a mansion. You wouldn't know.
It is the problem when you're dealing with essentially ultimate energy or unlimited energy and then, you know, unlimited capability to do what you want with it, is that there's kind of, you're going to run into these kind of inconsistencies. If they like, whatever, maybe, okay, whatever. The reason that not the entire Enterprise isn't a holodeck is because it's too energy intensive or whatever. Okay.
Right. Fine.
That makes sense. You have a couple of rooms dedicated.
But a building. That's connected to like a geothermal plant
or Earth,
something.
You would think that they literally would have unlimited energy and it would be fine. And yeah, then you do have to ask yourself.
What, one lucky hit by the brain and suddenly Earth just this black and yellow grid.
Oh, that would actually be pretty. Like the entire, the bridge, the Bay Bridge just kind of just goes away. And like,
no, it's the sign of the LaForge on the bridge.
But at least for these things, for the test that Deanna takes specifically, and then of course the one that Wesley takes earlier on in the show, these are perfect scenarios where you would use the combat training. You like the Yar. We see Yar in the Bracist episode.
Code of Honor.
When she's doing her ninja thing. And like that makes
for
total
training,
sense.
Yeah. Like why is the phaser dots range not on the holodeck?
Yeah.
There's
why yeah,
no
why would that not
be
part of the holodeck? It's absurd. Like you would never train anywhere else except the holodeck. Ever, I feel like. Ever.
The danger room.
The danger room, yeah.
All right. So moving on to...
Well, I mean, but I think also just one last thing about the training is that, you know, we all have different jobs, obviously, but we all have done, like, the boring training of, like, watching the video of, like...
Right.
I don't know. This isn't the first topic I think of, which I don't know why it is.
Sexual harassment training on the end.
Sexual harassment.
Sexual harassment. Banda.
It's like...
But instead, like you're 80s. The person, and as you walk through, if you say the wrong thing, you get slapped, and it just repeatedly...
But, like, making it personal when Troy takes a test, that it's not just, like, you're sending, like...
A person,
you know, Commander Schmedlab to his death. It's like Geordi. Okay, well, that's what makes it more real.
It's Commander Bruce Maddox, and she has no qualms sending him to his death.
Like, no, we can just repair that with the drone's computer. No, I think he needs to go.
You know, what's really an interesting aspect of this too, that we're kind of starting to come into now with all this VR technology that we have developing. You know, people are like, oh, you know, you see these videos online of people like doing roller coaster stuff and with the VR headsets on their head and their friends push them and these people freak out like, oh my god, like I'm really in this world. It's pretty easy to trick the brain, and imagine, yeah. And especially if it's an all-encompassing world, like all of a sudden you step into this world and it is your friend that you have to send to death. Maybe you do know, you know, the reasonable part of your brain knows, but the emotional thing is, it sees your friend standing there, and still sending them to their death might be a difficult decision. Who knows? But
and I feel like that would be an interesting week after that of your friend being like, "So, heard you killed me."
5 times.
Jordy just sighs. Everybody has to kill me.
Even him in his test. He has to send Jordy to his death.
Like, in order to take the engineer job, yep, in season 2, yep, he had to send himself to
That's
his
why
death.
He gets promoted so fast. He gets double credit for that. So
he's a self-loather.
He both survived and died in the test, which is the amazing thing.
But, like, so think about it. Like, the Kobayashi Maru that we see in...
He's the only engineer to ever have Jordy survive.
That's funny. Like the Kobayashi Maru, like, in Picard's time, I guess maybe when he was in the Academy, maybe they didn't have the holodeck technology, because we're given to believe that in the beginning of TNG, it's relatively new.
Or at least new on starships, which, you'd think it'd be around star bases or planets before.
I mean, he's having that fangasm in the Dixon Hill episode. It's like, it's real, and it's, you can feel it. And it's like, oh my God, is this
smells,
what this is about?
Really, the smells, Captain? Okay, yes, the smells.
So, you know, but I just feel like, man, they would not be restricted, even if it was way before TNG time, they wouldn't be restricted by just... what room can we mock up to look like the bridge of a ship, you know? Cause then what if they could send people to the escape pods or whatever? What if they had to leave the room? What if they had to, Kirk had to generations that stuff.
Don't worry. They have a really good DM. Nice. And he's controlling the roles. And so.
Well, and in, I think it's Ship in the Bottle or one of the Moriarty ones. I mean, he creates the illusion that they're in the entire Enterprise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole starship.
Wow.
That they
don't.
Yeah. Yeah, when the corridor started to tip up at 90-degree angle, that's when they knew. So, all right. Well, moving on to not the... In theory, okay, it's a great use, but it gets really creepy really fast.
No, in theory, it's a great episode.
No, yes. Oh, okay. No. But I'm talking about Geordi's use of the holodeck to recreate the Utopia Planitia shipyard in Booby Trap, and also... Dr. Leah Brahms. So, I mean, I'm giving him props for the location, not for the creepy say 5 commands. Geordi just knows what to say, because pretty much in 5 sentences he can make a fully sentient hologram no matter what. I think they need to watch that.
Well, now, and I was thinking, this is a Trek trope that we created, the create the expert. You
right.
Because I was watching...
Oh, just access their personal logs and dump their personality in. Oh, look, it's perfect. It's like what?
I can't remember the name of the episode. Suddenly Human? That doesn't sound right. But anyway, I was watching a Voyager episode where the Doc EMH...
Oh, yeah.
The Cardassian...
Yeah, Merced.
Yeah, whatever. And then, you know, you've had... well, Voyager, of course, also did Dr. Zimmerman before we met him in real life as a hologram. But, you know, that's sort of like the create the expert guest character. But we sort of did it first with Leah Brahms. Of course, we were the first ones to bring them back.
Which is funny, because later when they try to make, like, the backup doctor, and they just install, like, the entire medical database, he starts reading, like, Grey's Anatomy. It's like, wait, so it worked for the Cardassian, but not for the backup doctor?
I was noticing that. I was like, you know, because that was, like, season whatever, and then, like, 2 seasons later, Harry's like, oh, yeah, I can make it. I guess he was reading up those 2 years. he had a lot to do when he wasn't being promoted.
It also seems like an extremely abstract way to kind of problem solve. Like, if the computer that, like, you can directly...
You're making a bot, basically.
Yeah, if you can already directly interact with a computer that already knows all of these things, why do you have to sift through personalities and scenarios? Like, why can't you just be like, okay, computer.
That's true.
Give me the top 100 best solutions to this problem, and we'll go through them one by one. I've got the time.
But what's the recipe for Fugili, Daniel? That's going to be...
Well, that's true, because, you know, when Geordi's talking to the Leah Brahms hologram and she's, like, fighting him on his opinion, it's like, what is the computer actually doing? Is it saying, I'm right, you're wrong, like, as a computer?
It feels like you're literally wasting processing power on unnecessary, like, and that was the episode, Galaxy's Child, is it? Or,
Booby Traps first, Galaxy's Child Booby Trap, the actual route. Okay.
Yeah. So this is, like, the destruction of the Enterprise level issue here.
Right.
I'm more inclined to be like, no, why don't you just talk to the computer and figure it out, you two, instead of, like, recreating this scenario, finding the right conversations.
I mean, it's his whiteboard. The holodeck is Geordi's whiteboard.
I get it's kind of creative problem solving, but to me it just seems like you're placing way too many steps in between.
Look, when the season one era music starts playing, when you create a female on the holodeck, that's when the red flag starts going up.
I was just waiting for, like, you know, Captain Picard to come in and be like, Dr. Brobs, she is truly remarkable, Geordi.
The smells.
But it's like, I don't know. Okay. Like, imagine you're like, you know, like, I don't know, like you're a surgeon or something, and you go and you're like, this is what I need to do. I need to find a coloring book of the human body. And, you know, you like, you go through all of this process to, like, kind of, it's right. So weird. I don't know.
I just imagine a holographic creation of the 80s guy that wore, like, the costume that had all the body parts on the outside.
Oh, Slim Somebody? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. So the next good use I have is in the episode Homeworld, which is Worf's foster brother, Nikolai, creates... Homeward. Yeah,
bound.
He creates the...
This is with the shadow.
It's an incredible journey.
This is with the shadow. I can't remember.
Sassy and Chance. Yep. That's what we named the people. But yeah, so he's creating a la... This is the Star Trek Insurrection before Star Trek Insurrection. Basically, we're relocating these people... And we don't want them to realize it, so they're going through caves, and it's all on the holodeck, and the sign of LaForge is on the wall.
I don't think the cultural appropriation should really be a great use of holodeck, fooling native population.
Yeah, this is the
was not on the approved list.
So this is the bad, deceptive case use of the holodeck, right? We get it in Insurrection, and we get it in this episode as well. And it can be used to deceive people. Oh, the Moriarty episode as well.
Right. Ship and a bottle. Didn't anyone play with ships and bottles when they were little?
You know, it's there is something to be said about literally being able to kind of trick a person or many, many people, into crazy situations that they would never, ever, ever find, like entrapment, basically. And it's interesting because, again, like you said, it's just like Insurrection, but moving an entire group of people against their will or without their knowledge, without their consent,
right,
is a huge problem. But it's also...
Well, and someone died because of that.
Well, not only died. I mean,
well, I mean, yes. I mean, you really got to... I mean, that's like 8 steps removed. Yes, Darren, someone did die. In the episode that featured a holodeck, I'm not saying the holodeck killed the person.
Well, I mean,
well, the holodeck was responsible.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
But,
it wasn't a.
I don't think you can blame suicide on the holodeck.
The door won't open. Ritual
again. If the holodeck had been working properly that entire episode, we probably wouldn't have run into this problem, anyways. But it was just that.
Yeah, you think the first thing it would have done was lock the doors, but you know.
It's a very open society. See, if there had been a privacy foyer, maybe he would have had a chance.
And also, remember, too, this is a room that's maybe 20 feet by 20 feet, and there's like 100 people in that room. How are they not actually physically bumping shoulders? I'll never understand, but, it's okay.
I mean, I have to wonder, like... I know visually, and because, it's all made up, I know, but, like, you were saying how you can trick the mind. I mean, isn't there, like, a sort of, like, don't you feel that you're in a room? Because some of those holodecks seem
the
like...
The smells, Dan. The smells.
You know, I would just feel like, I feel like Barclay, you know, as neurotic as he is, as much as he loves the holodeck, I feel like he'd be the first person to be like, I'm claustrophobic in here. You know, I could feel the walls.
Yeah, I don't know. I really do buy the, I mean, especially since this technology is clearly obviously not real, but so advanced that it can definitely trick all of the senses. I mean, there's nothing that can't be tricked with trickery,
possible
right?
Like, edit,
you know,
here.
Optical illusions have been a thing for, you know, that we've understood for hundreds of years. There's true. No reason that in you know, with technology advancing, we can't trick your brain into thinking.
Is it a duck or a rabbit? A duck or a rabbit?
So I totally buy that aspect of it, and that's part of the reason why we think about it, we talk about it as Star Trek fans. Like, would you ever actually leave the holodeck? Well, no, of course you wouldn't, because you can go anywhere and do anything you want, and it would be amazing. And why would you? You know, and. I buy that aspect of it. That's totally real to me.
Well, like in Darren, would you, this mention that you brought up, it wasn't on your list, but it made me think of it's not really recreation, but also the holodeck as a use of therapy or counseling, because it also made me, because, you know, even though the people don't know it, but in a way it's a, you know, we're simulating your place so we can transition you to a new place because we're gods, apparently. But anyway, but that aside, imperialism aside, but it made me think about just like the small times of like when, you know, Scotty, you know, looked at the Enterprise Bridge, or when Admiral Jarok, Data, took him to the, I don't know, right. place on Romulus or whatever it was. And there's so many times that the holodeck in TNG and elsewhere is used to like, hey, this is this home or this place or this whatever. And it's sort of usually used not necessarily as recreation per se, but more of a, like, you know, a use, a therapy, counseling use. It's usually Troy or someone else kind of accompanying them to, like, sort of calm them down.
Well, think of Nog, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what that was. I mean, it wasn't, obviously it wasn't prescribed, and he
I think he had some Barclayitis in that
sure,
episode, though.
For sure.
But yes.
All right, so next, this is the episode that actually started this whole topic thought in my head, and it's Identity Crisis. This is the one where Geordi turns into the creepy, glowy alien. But this is the one where he's trying to figure out the mystery of that away mission he was on oh so long ago, and where there's the extra shadow. And I just love this episode where he deconstructs the scene from the camera, and he's trying to figure out like all the elements and the layers, and he CSIs all over, you know, that recording, and gets you know, an answer. And I loved that aspect of this episode.
I agree with you, Darren. I totally do, but I there's a Daniel voice in me going like, this is the sort of like the computer would be like, dude, there's a shadow. Like, you know, like,
right.
Did we need, like, the 20-minute, like, all right, remove 3 meters of rock. All right, this part, like, at the beginning, he's like, yeah, there's a shadow that shouldn't right. be.
Run spectral analysis. It's like, oh.
Yeah. But no, I mean, that aside, though, it is, I do like.
Yeah, there are a couple of problems with this concept. I like the application of the holodeck, for sure.
Apparently everyone loves the aspect, but go ahead. No.
But the ratio.
But the rosing. No, the biggest problem is, since when do we... I mean, this is also a problem with larger Star Trek in general. First of all, you would think that there's surveillance going on all the time, everywhere, all the time. Enough to know everything that's happening at once. It would make for a boring show, but you think the technology would be there. But if you had the ability to record all of your away team missions, that would also kind of shortcut some of the plots for most of these episodes.
Yeah.
Though I also feel like when you're going on like a way team and you're like, oh, hey, Commander Riker or Commander Data's brought us to the way team. All right, guys. All right, Darren, I want you'll be, here's the tricorder. I want you to be taking readings. Daniel, you'll be taking pictures.
Yeah.
Just, you could wear that right there. Just kind of be pointing at everyone.
Well, you think, you would think that every communicator, literally has full sense. Well, you could just put a tricorder in a communicator and sense everything all the time that everybody was.
Whoa, I'm Daniel. We can't do that in the 24th century.
Well, like tricorders are just like empathic. They can sort of sense the area, but you really need.
I mean, how many times do they say, like, Captain, you need to come down and see this? Why? Why do I need to come down and see this? Just turn on your camera in the science lab and let me see what it is, you know.
Commander Riker, you better come and see this. I'm like 2 meters away. Just tell me what you're like. It's a dead Romulan. Can you just say dead Romulan? Fine, I'll walk over there.
But Yeah, no, I mean, we get that. But, and yes, I'm sure he could ask the computer core the size of a building to figure out whether or not there's an extra shadow. But, you know, we want our characters to be able to do things for themselves.
I do love, well, and it makes me laugh every time I watch this episode. I love when he's like, Jordy's like, what the heck could be casting this shadow? And it's like, computer, reconstruct what's making the shadow, and it just makes this big blur.
I know, it's like a blob. That's the big gray blob. That's super creepy, because it's like, that's creepy.
I would have seen that guy. Yeah. I think I remember Commander Blob.
Oh, Commander Blob. So next, this is kind of on the edge of this principle of using the holodeck as a tool, but the Enterprise itself uses the holodeck to create a simulation in Emergence when it's creating its new life form, and we're on the train to New Vertiform City. So this is episode 723, and so yeah, I guess it is using it as a tool as it's kind of sorting out its own thoughts in an interface. I don't know. It's, but they do interact with it.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to what Daniel was kind of saying, that like the computer itself is boring,
right?
Like, you know, like you theoretically that's how it should work because that's who it is, right. And but like in order for it to whatever the that's what the holodeck does. It brings things to life.
I'm just picturing now in like a Measure of Man where Riker goes to that console and he's looking up the statistics of Data. How cool would it have been? I mean, I know it would have been crazy budget, but to have he's on the holodeck and he pushes a button and then there's like Data standing there and then he pushes another button and it's like all of his innards, like the servo mechanisms and such.
Like computer holographic Data. And like
it's like cross section. It's like, shoo.
Yeah. Or is it like you know, in the Avengers or Iron Man, where he's just Tony Stark's Data and like, shoo! And like,
pretty much.
Data opens up and you see inside.
See, there, here's his heart right here. I found it.
This is, oh man, this episode. You know, it's just, there are so many, this new series, and Star Trek has kind of skirted around this issue. We get it. The Enterprise or the ship or the station, whatever, is always a character on the show. And we even literally give a voice to that character, but we never really explore it. And this is kind of the closest we get to that idea of like exploring the ship as a character.
Because it is AI.
Yes, it is. It's AI. It would absolutely have a personality. And I really hope this next series at least explores it a little bit. And for those of you who play games, we could do a kind of Mass Effect thing. With Edith, the ship's AI, but basically you
or
give
Cortana, yeah.
Or the great Doctor Who episode where the TARDIS gets
TARDIS the Doctor's wife,
and it's like that idea that okay, this thing is so smart. I mean, come on, at this point they've done everything but that, right?
That's true.
The Doctor essentially is part of Voyager's computer.
Even the DS9 station has its own personality.
Exactly. So it's like at this point, you might as well just assign the ship a personality and it's in some form or shape. And because that would be a kind of cool.
I would love aspect. if they announce the casting and include who's playing the ship.
That would be
and
really
playing
cool.
The ship. It's actually just them in a suit and they're like in front of a blue screen.
I think the effects are going to be so good with this one.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we don't have we don't have Majel anymore. Bear. So
yeah.
It will be interesting to see who will actually play at least the voice of the computer, even if it's.
I think Tristan votes B'Elanna.
Oh, she did pretty good. I don't know. I hope it's somebody. I hope it's Jarvis. Actually, I just changed my answer.
Oh, Paul Bettany.
Yeah, Paul Bettany should definitely.
I guess it's a little too on the nose right there.
Though I'm also saying that the fact that Majel did do the computer voice for like 25 30 years, she probably has said every single word you would ever need the
computer. That's true. To say. You could write a program,
just slice it pretty easily.
Mission Impossible it.
Or like, and this is just from, you know, obviously Brian Fuller, we're super Star Trek fans, listen to us. If you want to go off the wall, do like a Christopher Walken. That would be cool. Let's think outside the box, man. That would be
a lot of lag time.
<I noticed>. That would actually be really funny. But anyways, I digress. I'm sorry. I was taking us a little off course on that one.
Well, it is like the computer coming alive.
Right.
And
Yeah, because the computer is alive. At this point, I mean, especially in the beginning of the TNG, we're, like, given to think that the
What is this? What is this?
The ship can run itself.
Yeah.
And everybody talks to it. And it, you know, it even has snark sometimes. Like, there are some times that people are like, hey, computer, this and this. And it gives you, like, kind of a half-sarcastic answer. And so...
I think the computer told Data to shut up one time, if I remember correctly.
I think that was a dream, but yeah. No, I agree with you, Daniel. And I mean, I think I mentioned it once before on another episode of Earl Grey that I would love to see an episode. It doesn't have to be a recurring character, just a single character, like a Lower Decks kind of character that they're just responsible for sorting through all the gigaquads of data that's generated every day, from sensor recordings to personal logs to... I mean, if there's cameras everywhere, like, how do you sort through that and keep what is needed and get rid of what is not? Because, you mean, space isn't infinite as far as the amount of storage capacity even a ship like the Enterprise would have.
I'm not picking on Daniel, but, like, I'm picturing sort of, like, the stereotypical, like, in-the-basement IT person. Like, you have all these, like, young, fit Starfleet people, and you go down to, like, the computer management. It's sort of like the guy from Jurassic Park.
You didn't say the magic word.
Candy wrappers all over his desk, and, you know, he's like...
Where's Lieutenant Smith? Check the vending machines.
Or if anybody is familiar with the IT crowd... the guy in the server room, we can talk. Yeah, that's exactly who the computer would be.
Well, a small example of using the holodeck as a tool is in the Nth Degree, where super smart Barclay creates his interface chair, and he's like, oh, I need such and such. And the computer's like, I don't know what that is. He's like, here's how you build one, you know. But so again, it's a part of the plot, but it does showcase how you could really build anything you want, and supposedly the Enterprise can at least create hard light constructs that obey laws of physics and stuff. It's very technical.
Well, there's a part I wouldn't make up now, but I know it's on the list, so I won't bring it up until you bring it up. But like the fact that the holodeck can do more than it should,
yeah.
We can just talk about Moriarty. Like, is that really, really? Should the holodeck be able to do something more than it should be?
Oh, I didn't uncheck the box, create sentient life. Oh, darn. Yeah.
You know, but it's like, even with Barclay in that episode, like, it's doing something that's not feasible. But then again, you know, it's really just a fancy replicator or transporter at the end of the day. If I understand.
It's for people who don't want to do the command prompt. They want the visual interface.
Wait. Yeah. I like it. Like,
so
it's the
GUI.
GUI.
Yeah.
It's
the HUI.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to use the Elcar's Linux. Well, look, okay, you can. Fine, okay, but I'm going to be in the holodeck.
Does that mean Worf goes just as user-friendly as Linux is anyways, so...
Does that mean when Worf, you know, was stumped by the computer panel and it wasn't in the proper configuration, it was in Dvorak? Is that why he got all flustered? I can't send my space mail. Okay, so only a couple more, unless there's mentions that I haven't listed here, but another training mission was in Chain of Command, where Picard, Beverly, and Worf are training for their covert mission onto the Cardassian planet. And yeah, this is, you know, again, just, you know, oh, this time the guard was here, and this time the guard was here, and they're playing a video game, literally.
Yeah, training and recreation is a fine line. Because, like, you know, and again, it's not an original idea. Well, I suppose it is, and that Next Generation did it first. But, like, I remember, and I don't do episode titles of other series, Deep Space Nine, where they ended up teaming up with the Jem'Hadar against the Jem'Hadar, and they had the joint Jem'Hadar Starfleet mission, and they, because that's what they did. They had the little sort of training, you know, in the Holosuite, excuse me, with the Starfleet and the Jem'Hadar, so...
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, that direct hands-on training is done occasionally, but this was an instance of it.
I can't remember what episode, probably any of them when you think about it, but that I really thought about this, like, not being a programmer or a computer person or whatever, you know, I'm very simplistic, but, like, when you actually have to create this stuff, like, that training program, it's not like, you know, I forget the name of the planet, but, like, Cetrus 3. You know, like, Cetrus 3, boom.
Right.
It's like, someone had to be like, okay, here's the color of the rock, what kind of rock, here's the placement of the rock. This is where, and I'm like, ugh.
Are you saying, like, if you look off into the background, you can see the cut-paste mechanism of the tree line? But no, that's true. I mean, you would need a very advanced AI, which the computer is, to help you create such a program. It's so dense.
So, it's not great. Sometimes you ask for a table.
Ah, yes. Oh, that's true. Oh, Josh, how did I forget my favorite table scene listed here? So, let's say that's... Is that Riker? I'll say Riker calls for that. But yeah, in Schism's, he called. Yeah, they use the.
No, it's Schism's, Tristan.
So in the clicky one, they use the holodeck to create something from their imaginations, from their memory. And it's the craziest looking table I've ever seen, but, you know. Maybe so. But yeah, that's a great example of using that instead of, it's basically the sketch artist of the computer. It's like, describe the table that hit you, you know. Was it?
I feel like we've gone a long way from like the one you would get when you were on a long ride, you know, to who knows where in summer vacation with like the magnet of like Woolly Wally or whatever you would do.
The magna doodle?
Yeah, then we have the, yeah.
You know what kind of... You know what kind of scares me, though, is like, imagine now there's four people that have been experiencing this, right?
Right.
They all go into the holodeck, and like Riker's one of them. And do you guys follow the Twitter account Riker Googles?
Yes.
Oh, man. Philip just shook his head. Philip, you need to watch it or to follow it. It's really, really funny. Basically, it's just all of the Google searches that Riker would go through. And it's great. So it's making me think that, like, imagine you go on the holodeck, the ship's smart enough to know you and your personal history. So maybe the holodeck has kind of like an autofill feature. You know how Google has autofill?
I see where this is going.
So Riker gets in there and he's like, computer, I need a chair. And, you know, I'll leave it to your imagination what that might mean for, you know, someone like Riker.
Well, then Worf, he gets his uncomfortable, like...
Hand chair
that's up in his his room.
But I'm just saying, you know, it would be really funny because if the computer is
so you're
smart,
saying clearing the browser history of the holodeck is a wise
yes
move.
Before you go in there, yeah, or you know, maybe going into the holodeck in incognito mode might serve you best.
Oh gosh. Okay, well, one of the last ones I had on my list, episode, it's truly a joy, is A Matter of Perspective. And this is the one where they recreate the space station and the Krager waves actually react with the holographic station from the generator on the planet and, like, kill a woman. You know, that's a direct death, Philip, you know. But yeah, that's where, again, the holodeck can do that now. Great.
Yeah, that was, and that's what I didn't want to mention because you didn't mention it. Of like, the holodeck can do more than what it can do. Like, I mean, can you create a warp core in the holodeck? I mean, like, you know, like, really, like, how far can we go?
Yeah.
Well, we can create life, apparently. So I guess there is no limit to what you can do in the holodeck, but.
Yeah, they definitely need to set hard and fast rules for a lot of these things because we took
them
for granted.
Yeah, but then you get the issue of, like, you know, a certain number of
episode coming up.
Well, but then you get like a certain number of torpedoes on the USS Voyager. Like, it's good to yes, I agree, it's good to set limits, but you have to also be careful not to make it too constricting.
No. Well, no, I disagree completely. And I'm going to tell you why. It like
next on Battlebridge.
There is no problem with saying in the beginning of Voyager, we have whatever XX number of torpedoes, and when they run out, we're out.
20? That's not a lot.
So there's no problem with that. It's the writer's fault past that point. If you establish it, fine. First of all, this is Star Trek. If you want to make some ridiculous reason that you can come up with more torpedoes, then that's okay. I'm sure there's a bazillion ways they could have gotten more torpedoes. The problem is they didn't even bother to try. They just said...
Well, Neelix, I'm glad you made all those Leola Root torpedoes.
And that is the name of the episode right there, Leola Root torpedoes. But, you know, it's... And this is why canon matters, and this is why context matters, because all of these stories take place in a setting of some sort that elevates or kind of deflates the stakes. And if literally Voyager can go around and just shoot torpedoes at everybody and blow everything up, that even though it's established that they don't have that capability, then yeah, it does kind of make it seem. And I'm not just ragging on Voyager, but that's just what we.
I'm now picturing Endgame, and they're in the transwarp conduit, and they need the torpedo to destroy the Borg sphere in front of them, and they're like, and it's like click, click. Oh man,
we only have one left, and you better make it down.
Well, that would actually elevate the stakes, right? And that would have made it interesting. So it's, you know, it's just like, but there are certain things in Star Trek that we take for granted that don't make sense a lot of the time. Replicator technology. Holodeck technology, these kinds of things have to be clearly established so we understand at least what their limits are. Because if there are no limits, then you can do these things, the endless things with them. And I think that that's what's one of the things I'm most excited about for the new Star Trek show is like in the way that modern storytelling works is like you can establish stakes that can't be broken. And it just felt like, you know, because of the way things were established before, you can be a little more fluid with them.
I mean, like, if you said that you can only go a certain warp speed, I think that limit.
Something like that.
But yeah, but the way modern television is told is, you're exactly right, Daniel. They set the stakes. They're thinking long term. They're thinking the entire season on day one. They're not thinking, oh, we got to write a dozen episodes and then keep. That's just not how television's done anymore. And so it's totally feasible that it goes into the writer's Bible that this is how this technology works, or this is how, you know, torpedoes work or whatever, and you can hopefully stick to that because we like, you know, that's why Star Trek is sci-fi. The how matters.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why I'm saying there's conveyor belts in the holodeck.
There are. Treadmills. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Treadmill floors. Yep. Okay. Well, that was my list. Is there any, besides schisms I added, is there any that I missed, you think, for using the holodeck as a tool?
You know, I feel like I've been talking a lot this episode and have gotten on a lot of soapbox, but let me soap boxes. I think somebody should tell Data what that means. But let me get on one more.
Inquiry. Soapbox?
Not now, Data. To Snope?
My last point here. I hate it when people call These Are the Voyages a TNG episode. I really do. Really bothers me a lot. But it is a good example of what we're talking about, and it features Star Trek TNG characters. So I feel like it's fair game for this conversation.
It is fair game for our honorable mentions at the end here.
And that's actually a really cool concept for holodeck technology. Like, do you want to go back and experience a historically significant event, you know, in a way that's real, in a way that changes your perspective of exactly what happened? That's a really cool kind of element to the holodeck that we don't actually get to see a lot of, I feel like.
Yeah, and the one thing, and I think we had mentioned it off mic, was in Family with Wesley seeing his dad.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a very basic, I suppose, you know, we're talking about all this other stuff. And it's not recreation, just simply holographic messaging, which I guess, you know, like, that's old hat to us. Oh, blah, 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 which of course doesn't even exist, really. But, I mean, that just sort of basicness, even though it's sort of a, you know, there was a compatibility issue there, I think, you know, using technology for, you know, newer technology. This 8-track won't fit into my iPod. But anyway, but nevertheless, you know, Wesley got to see his dad, and again, that's really what the holodeck, as we've all discussed, is about, the power of the visual, the power of that, of perception. It's a matter of perspective. But it, I mean, it also makes me wonder about, you know, basically with matter of perspective, and then with, with something we already mentioned here, but it made me, schisms. Of the psychology of, because at least in the legal sphere, but of course anything, of that, how much eyewitness statements are so terrible. Like, yeah. How many, and I mean, I'm not getting a soapbox, but I'm just saying how much, you know, that in criminal justice system, you know, convictions could be on one eyewitness, which are so terribly unreliable. And I just wonder, like, if you do the holodeck, when you're doing, like, you have the schisms, I would love to see the actual argument is going to be like, that's not what that table looked like at all. What are you talking about? Like, this is what it looked like. No, you have it completely wrong. And, like, even though they all saw the same thing, but
as they were semi-unconscious through the in the void.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's although I liked what you said, Daniel, about, you know, the almost incompatibility, and now I'm picturing like planned obsolescence of holodecks where it's like next year holodeck 4K is coming out.
Can you run holodeck 4 incompatibility of holodeck 1? Because some of my best holo novels were in the holodeck 1 format.
Yeah, and see, you watch it and it's and you can't control the camera and the resolution's terrible. The background, it feels like there's a wall there. Like it feels like you're on a set.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I like it when you could see the grid lines. That's what I like about my holiday games.
See, you're going to have to upgrade to HOS 4.0 in order to run this program, but you lose all your old stuff, so awkward.
But yeah, no, there'd be so many. It'd be really interesting to see, you know, especially a lot of it's going to obviously be what time frame the new series is set in. Is it set in a time where there are holodeck technology or not? Because we've seen many.
It didn't stop Enterprise. They had a bag of sand and that worked for them. So
that is true. You know, that is true.
Did it? Did it?
Well, no, it was an episode them, anyways.
Right. Recreation deck. But yeah, well, as long as we get a danger room, you know, that's that'll be fine. So, all right. Well, it's, you know, again, it's always fun revisiting topics that we've talked about here on Earl Grey. And again, there's many, many to many topics we've talked about in over 144 episodes. So yeah, we do encourage, take a look at our back catalog, look at some of our technology ones. I mean, I still can't believe we did an episode all about separating the saucer and the times they did that. But we did, we found a way. And so,
and we did it manually.
Earl Grey finds a way.
They were so excited whether or not they could. They didn't stop to think if they should.
No, that's funny.
But yes. Yeah, so, but again, it's been fun talking about holodecks and their use for creating sentient life, among other things. But that's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Earl Grey this week. Here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You know, Star Trek All Access gives you a great acronym, though.
STAR!
STAR, yeah.
Yes.
STAR!
Yeah, the upward angle on the... Yeah, totally get it.
The Orb.
I don't know if obsessive love is really love, because it's... I think it's more about possession. Yeah, and for Dukat, she's a possession of his, not really... a relationship of his.
The 602 Club.
But yeah, Evan Peters has way too much fun with this character. I mean, he's really embracing it, and just always brings a smile to my face when I see him.
Saturday Morning Trek.
The 30 seconds that we spent on Scotty singing probably could have been used with a really fun why are all these women in security uniforms standing around us?
Rather than just, you're more handsome than ever.
Yeah, that, what was that about?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This week of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com. This is a great way for you to read all of the books you want to read but never have time for. Audible is always expanding with over 150,000 titles to choose from. There are classics, current bestsellers, and famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation. Audible has something for everyone. Now, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to try out Audible yourself. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read. To support Trek FM, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. You'll be inside the observation lounge of our network, able to participate in our monthly patron roundtable podcasts and supporting the production of all of our great content. We would like to take this moment to thank our current patron associate producers, Stephen Boyd and Ron Sarna. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called The Babel Conference, found through the Facebook search field, or like the facebook.com/TrekFM page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter, at TrekFM.
Hi, Philip. So if someone wanted to talk to you about your favorite non-Skeletor program, where would they find you?
On Twitter, and my handle there is NC Public Servant. That's NC for North Carolina.
And Daniel, if someone wanted to find out the Konami code for creating sentient life on the holodeck, how would they contact you?
Well, they wouldn't need to contact me. I'll just tell them right now, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start. But that's okay. They can find me on Twitter, at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
And if someone wanted to talk to me about the joys of A Matter of Perspective, oh, that episode, they can find me on Twitter under Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Okay, guys. Well, I think, it's been interesting talking about the holodeck besides, that just raw recreation. And again, there are, like we mentioned, many other episodes in Voyager and Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, that talk about this topic even further. So I think I'll do a little research and pop in some Voyager for the rest of tonight. So, computer, end program, Earl Grey 144. Oh, I'm trapped. I can't get out.
The safeties are off. Darren, get out of there.
Why would you turn the safeties off on a podcast? That doesn't even make sense. Fire.